Namaste. Welcome back to season 2 of Anthropause.
Simone and I recently celebrated 1 year of Anthropause. It has been a roller coaster, and to see that the stories we've presented have reached more than 25 countries is baffling. To those of you who have been with us from the beginning, thank you so much. And if you are new here, welcome. We hope you will join us in our journey of navigating and understanding the climate crisis.
We would also like to extend our gratitude to the UBC Sustainability Hub for all the support and love. Also, thank you so much, Iman, for creating such beautiful artwork for our podcast. And lastly, Sadashma, thank you so much for being such an amazing co-host.
Oh, thank you, Simone. It has been so great working with you and Iman, and very excited to see what season 2 has in store for us. So many of you know that season 1 focused significantly on South Asia. We spoke with environmental stakeholders from different countries across the region. So firstly, we would like to thank all our guests who shared their stories with us and supported our cause. We learned so much from our conversations. Therefore, to ensure that we learn more this season, we have decided to break all borders. Simone, would you like to clarify what breaking all borders imply?
Yes, Sadashma. By breaking all borders, we're focusing on the entire Global South. We are also expanding our conversations to people representing the Global South or are from BIPOC communities, transcending multiple cultures and geographical locations.
We are looking forward to bringing you more stories, more artwork, more conversations. So without any further ado, let's officially begin our second season.
This topic that we're covering today is very close to our hearts, and we often catch ourselves talking about it for long hours.
Yeah, but recently, Simone and I, we both had to unlearn and relearn this topic, right? Because we realized that we'd also fallen victims to looking at this topic from a very singular perspective.
So today, together, we will be debunking climate anxiety. Or let's put it more as a question, will we be debunking climate anxiety?
So to help us really understand what climate anxiety is and what the nuances are, let's bring our guest into the conversation.
Nurse practitioner LaTanya Wallace is a board-certified psychiatric family nurse practitioner and naturopath with 15 years of experience. She's also a climate-aware therapist and is a member of the Climate Psychology Alliance, CPA North America. She provides care from a client-centered healing theoretical approach, including holistic assessment and intervention for physical, mental, and or spiritual imbalance.
Welcome to the podcast, Ms. Wallace. Hello, Ms. Wallace. Thank you so much for joining us in our podcast. Welcome.
Thank you.
So to start this episode, Ms. Wallace, we were introduced to you through the Climate Psychologist Alliance directory, which we will be attaching the link to in the description box. So we must ask you, what is the Climate Psychologist Alliance or the CPA?
Mm-hmm. It's a group of professionals and in the psychiatric community, and also associates of them that are interested in supporting both groups and individuals in attaining balance and understanding and struggles and managing personal process and also group process in relating to processing climate change concerns. So that could be in regard to denial, rationalization, avoidance and processing feelings, personal, environmental, political, et cetera. It's actually a holistic, it can present holistically. So it could be a plethora of ways that presents.
So, Ms. Wallace, what would you define as climate anxiety? And would you call it a clinical condition?
Climate anxiety could be, it's wide open. It would vary by individual. I don't think that there's a structured definition of what that would be. It's really just like any anxiety, that would be based upon what I would call like a proprioception, and that's the sum total of events that brings an individual to their situation, especially in a BIPOC presentation, that would be unique. And so, for example, as I'm African-American, for an African-American, that could be, when we're speaking about environments, impacted financially. So if finances bring a person to a certain situation, we'll talk about Maslow's hierarchy, how that impacts an individual, finances, coloring the lens of how a person interprets their anxiety or how that anxiety presents. And then having other stressors like developmental staging and those aspects of navigating that, impacted by what one is taking in from media, and also political stance, also spiritual stance, in addition to climate change, all of those stressors impacting an individual and how they're perceiving that would impact their presentation on how they interpret climate and how that manifests in their anxiety. And so I think it really varies, but it does have to do with holistically how they present in their environment and how they're taking in the changes, variances, and how they're perceiving the climate changes.
Thank you for your answer. So you mentioned Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? And I remember from my psychology class in college that from the bottom of the hierarchy, like upwards, it starts from physiological, then safety, love and belonging, and I believe it's esteem and self-actualization, right? So I must ask, like, who do you think is more vulnerable to climate anxiety? So, you know, in terms of age, ethnicity, race?
Again, I just have to prelude all of my answers with I'm a holistic practitioner and I'm a naturopath. And so in that, I look at everything, all diagnosis, my assessment and my treatment plans from a holistic stand, and that proprioception, you'll hear me say that repeatedly, that we as individuals present holistically. It's the sum total of events that bring us to who we are. And so in that, I can't just say, you know, it's a poor person or it's an Asian person, et cetera. It could be anybody, and that sum total of events that brings them to however they present in their situation. And so it could be anyone, but in that, you know, the research shows that youth that have, you know, fear of the unknown, we have political factors that aren't really looking at the climate the way that we would like them to. We have youth that have been protesting about fear of the unknown, anticipatory anxiety. So youth, I would say, are impacted. I would say future generations may be impacted. But again, you know, that could be anyone. Maybe someone with a panic disorder would be highly impacted.
Thank you for your answer. So we had a poll up in our Instagram where we asked our followers, is climate anxiety real? And of the people who voted, 95% said yes. So I wanted to ask you, in your career, have people come to you to speak about their climate anxiety?
Definitely. Again, a lot of people that have generalized anxiety or panic type disorders, definitely. I think you all had mentioned an individual that mentioned that maybe race was a factor, and that maybe BIPOC communities, this wasn't a worry or something like that for BIPOC, which I think is ridiculous. I've had some discussions with people in the community that definitely are worried about this, that are definitely organizing in a plethora of ways in that regard. Yeah, definitely.
So do people, when they come to you, do they specifically use the word climate anxiety, or do they
they don't specifically use the word, because again, from a holistic standpoint, it's integral into a presentation. Right. And so if we look at Maslow's, you know, there's some other things and, you know, coming from that stance that maybe they present with needing to eat or needing to get along in their relationship. And they have some other things going on. And on top of that, the stressors of fear of the unknown, fear of the climate, et cetera, is a worry also.
I mentioned the article by Sarah Jacquet Ray, who talks about how climate anxiety is an overwhelmingly white phenomenon, right? So I just wanted to read out a little quote from the article and wanted to hear your perspective and what you think about it. So in her article, she says, if people of color are more concerned about climate change than white people, why is the interest in climate anxiety so white? Is climate anxiety a form of white fragility or even racial anxiety? Put another way, is climate anxiety just, quote, for white people wishing to hold on to their way of life or get back to normal, to the comforts of their privilege?
Yes, you know, I am in circles where we have long conversations about this. There are groups that are organizing communities in regard and response to fears of, you know, the damages and the ramifications of climate change. We have meetings where I'm looking at our options. We've traveled to places that we potentially can relocate in this regard. It is a serious issue that we definitely are planning to act upon. And so I think that that is a very harsh and a rash statement.
So I feel like we found this tweet that was a little more, I guess, like, not, I guess I call it a bit more subtle and also takes into account several perspectives. So Dr. Kamal Kapadia, she tweeted, I'm not white and I run an online global climate school for professionals with students from many countries. In my limited experience, climate anxiety is not white, but different cultures might process, talk about, and approach it differently. Mm-hmm. So what would, you know, do you think that, you know, like, Dr. Kapadia's tweet is more of what aligns with your, with how you feel, with what you think?
I do also, yes. Mm-hmm. I think that definitely I travel a bit in East Africa, for example, that it's just viewed differently, processed differently. I think that on Zanzibar Island, for example, if people processed it the way that we do here, that there would be immense worry and, you know, in that culture, even mental health is viewed as kind of taboo. And so it's just integrated differently. People have to live and survive. And so they process that in a different way and integrate it differently because, you know, they're living on an island and they're definitely at risk. And so needing to integrate that in a way that they can survive and continue living day to day.
Right. So moving on from these tweets, we came across these articles that sometimes talked about how climate anxiety might be a good thing. So we wanted to ask you, is climate anxiety a good thing or a bad thing?
Those terms, good and bad, again, from a naturopath, holistic, from my holistic purview, I don't believe, I think that's kind of like black and white thinking. And I tend to tell my clients and just in my life view that there's a lot in the middle. And I also tend to say that things happen for a reason. And so there's a lesson in everything that happens in our life. And so, you know, in that, I think that we need to pay attention to this and something needs to be done about it. And so it's important that we attend to it. And then we look at from an internal family systems view, from what Dr. Schwartz would say, is there's a part of us, an anxious part of us that is saying, hey, it's tapping us on the shoulder and saying something needs to be done. And so in that, if you want to say it's good, or if you're saying this part needs to be balanced, then we need to attend to it.
And that's like a really, I feel like a beautiful way to approach this, and completely agree with you. It's a very gray area and cannot be called good or bad. However, yeah, like definitely if it is something that needs to be, like there needs to be a response to it. It needs to be addressed, definitely. So we have a very important question for you now, and, you know, to kind of like wrap up our conversation. So what are some ways you suggest to cope or manage climate anxiety?
Again, that would be individualistic. So I would need to kind of chat with the individual, do an assessment, kind of assess what's going on with the individual, and then assess what's worked, what hasn't worked for the individual. But really staying away from sources that kind of make it worse, and going towards that which is calming, soothing, and staying away from things that are, you know, like, for example, the media that's feeding delusion, basically. You know, we've talked about political sources that aren't doing things, that are making things worse. For someone that was having anxiety, I'd encourage them, you know, to not engage that way, to engage with things that were more supportive in that regard, likely our organization, support groups, maybe a therapist in that regard, things that are peaceful and calming, engaging in self-inquiry, people of like mind, negative spheres of influence, staying away from that. And if one is spiritual or religious, seeking solace therein, and seeking like enlightenment and abiding kind of peaceful type activities. Some things that one may do in regard to self-inquiry is considering if things are headed left, asking oneself, what should I be doing now? Where should I be living? Who should I be associating with? How should I handle my finances? Taking appropriate action, living practically, and engaging in things that are truthful. So those are some suggestions that I have there. No, usually, like from a holistic stance, anxiety has a root. And so things like EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization reprocessing, help to deal with the root of things. The only way to really heal anxiety or anything else is to get to the root of it. And so, you know, treatments like EMDR, internal family systems with Dr. Schwartz help to get to the root of that. So I definitely recommend, you know, reinforcing anything with something sustainable like that.
Those were all wonderful recommendations. Thank you so much. I think Sudhashma and I have learned a lot, and all our listeners will learn a lot from that. But I really wanted to ask you, as an environmental student myself, and Sudhashma as well, I think she can agree to this. Sometimes when I go to class, go to listen to lectures, things that I have to do, I have to associate with, I realize when I'm taking in some like information or something in class, like I find myself, I don't know if it's climate anxiety or a little bit of stress. I normally would just be like, oh, I think it's climate anxiety, but I don't know, right? But I'm in the middle of a class and I am taking all these information, and I think that I'm feeling climate anxiety. Like, what would you suggest for students like to do in situations like that?
Is there a specific type of information, or is it just information in general? Is it information about the climate, or just information in general? Are you feeling overloaded?
I think like for us, it's more like information that we hear about the global south, we'd say, like, you know, about when we hear like you just talked about Zanzibar, right? And when we hear about countries, islands, you know, where in our region, and it's just like, it just very unsettling. And also it doesn't help that we're like our families are back home, you know, like 8,000 miles away. Mm-hmm. So I believe that's what really causes us to feel whatever we're feeling, you know.
We have some things called core beliefs. You could probably Google core beliefs. And those are kind of looking within to see what kind of negative cognitions that you're having in that time and tuning into that. And then there's an opposite belief. And we say kind of when you're having a negative belief to kind of integrate the opposite energy, cultivate that opposite energy. And so, for example, in that situation, one might feel like, I am in danger, or I'm unsafe. So if you're feeling I am in danger or I am overwhelmed, we would integrate that opposite energy. I can survive. And so tapping is a way to stimulate the right and the left brain, which helps to integrate into the subconscious mind. So you can butterfly tap. If you can't do that in class, you don't want anybody to see you, you can tap your thighs under your desk, or you can tap your wrist. You're just stimulating your subconscious mind, which helps to decrease that SNS, or sympathetic nervous system, and helps to integrate the rest and digest system, which will decrease the heart rate, decrease your thought, your mind from racing, et cetera. So instead of I'm in danger or I am overwhelmed, you could say I can survive. So you could tap your thighs. I can survive. I can survive. Or I can get through it. I can get through it. And that can help to just decrease that stimulation, decrease that anxiety. You're integrating the opposite energy or vibration and helping your subconscious mind to kind of soothe that down. So those are some things you're changing, that core energy or belief in the moment. There's some other things that you can do. There are some things called containing, where you can contain the thought and kind of get it out of your body at that moment and deal with it later if you need to attend to what's happening in class. But just some skills to kind of tone down that stimulation so that you can focus on what you're doing in the moment.
That was really helpful. And I think that's going to help me, Stashma, and all our listeners as well. Those are all the questions from my side. Stashma, if you have anything else.
Good. Just to kind of like wrap our conversation, just ask you, Ms. Wallace, is there any extra information that you would like to share with us? You know, and when we ask this, like, I guess, like, what we're asking is there a quote that you would like to share, you know, that you kind of like live by that is very relevant to like your holistic, you know, therapy and holistic take on climate issues? You know, anything of that sort, so that, you know, we, our listeners can also kind of just carry it with them.
A lot of times I tell my clients, you are the peace that you seek. And so a lot of times when we're really anxious and wound up, and we are seeking something outside of ourselves to heal that, it's because our nervous system is just really stimulated. And that's why I like the tapping to bring that down helps. And the breathing to bring down that, again, that stimulation helps. And to integrate the opposite energy or vibration helps to bring us back to that which we started at before all the trauma. And so doing those things integrates that opposite energy and vibration to return us back to homeostasis, back to that place of actually actualization that we started with when we were born. So we're flipping that pyramid over of Maslow's and returning that to which we were when we started. So that's it.
Thank you so much, Ms. Wallace. Like, this has been such a great conversation, and I feel like, you know, it's just climate anxiety is still a very, it's like it's got a lot of nuances, and you know, you've definitely helped us like kind of lay a foundation to our understanding, and thank you.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you so much. It was such a pleasant, calm conversation. Like, I feel very calm right now. I don't know about you, Sudhashma, but I started this episode with a little bit of anxiety, but just having this conversation, I just feel so calm towards the end of the episode. So thank you so much for this wonderful conversation.
Thank you for having me.
So Simone, what are your thoughts after that conversation?
There's a lot going on in my head, Sudhashma. I feel like there's still a lot to be discussed. I really learned a lot from our conversation with Ms. Wallace. I also felt super relaxed when she was demonstrating her way of coping with climate anxiety. And I think that I will definitely use that when I'm at discomfort thinking about our future.
Right. I definitely agree with you. I completely agree that there is anxiety induced by the current climate crisis. And for that reason, her tips and advice are very helpful. I also thought that it was very interesting that there has not been a single person who has sought her counseling, who has like specifically used the term climate anxiety.
Mm-hmm, right, I agree. This does make me question whether climate anxiety is a predominantly white and Western term. I mean, some of our followers did bring up the fact that climate anxiety is used more in Western academia in comparison to the rest of the world. And also, when you quickly type climate anxiety onto Google Scholars, you'll see that most of the scholarship was written in recent years.
Exactly. And this is where Dr. Kamal Kapadia, her tweet comes to me. So I agree that climate anxiety is a phenomenon that looks very different across cultures, race, age, ethnicity, and borders. And I also do agree that although the anxiety is real and it is felt, people on the forefront of the climate crisis do not have the privilege to just sit down and be like, I have climate anxiety and I need therapy. And, you know, instead they have to think of like adaptation and mitigation strategies, or else resort to very mentally draining options like migrating to another location, right?
Mm-hmm. Sudhashma, that was such a great point. I completely agree. And it is not realistic for these people to have immediate or affordable access to mental health facilities. And also, speaking of mental health, let's also recognize that in a lot of countries that happen to be bearing the brunt of the climate crisis, mental health is still a taboo.
Definitely. And that would be like a whole nother discussion, right? But like Ms. Wallace said, I do agree that there really is like no black or white, good or bad. However, one thing is clear, climate anxiety should be harnessed with environmental justice. And to truly understand climate anxiety, it needs to be understood in the context of climate injustice, you know, in order to bring positive transformation to individual and systemic thinking. What do you think?
I completely agree, Sudhashma. And now we would like to end this episode by turning this question to our listeners. What do you all think? Let us know. Thank you for listening to our episode. You can listen to our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, and other platforms. You can also find us on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Links to these platforms will be in the description box.
We will also be attaching links to the Climate Psychologists Alliance directory below, along with the article by Sarah Chakat-Ray and also the tweet that we mentioned in our conversation. And most importantly, we will be attaching Ms. Wallace's information and her links just in case you would like to contact her. See you next month.